Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and the largest segment of our society. To those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, and even those of you who are finally coming to realize that you should not trust nor adore your military. All of these institutions are rotten to the core. They're counterproductive. They cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate with me at any time during this program, I am Yetta, is 877-300-7645. Normally, we do a segment called Sports in the News. We haven't done it in a while, but man, is sports ever making the news. Many of you know that the New England Patriots will be facing my Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl, and that in the landslide victory, overwhelming victory, that the Patriots had over the Indianapolis Colts, we have inflate gate, or deflate gate, as the case may be, deflated balls. And these 11 of the 12 balls that were used by the Patriots during that game at halftime were found to be 2 pounds light.
And it should also be pointed out that after they were found to be light, they replaced them with balls that were the appropriate weight.
Correct, they did. And the second half was played with appropriately inflated balls, while the first half was played with inappropriately inflated balls. Which means, by the way, that the balls could not have become inappropriately deflated during the game. They were somehow deflated. And if you look at the game itself, did it have any influence on the game? No, because the game was not close from the beginning because Indianapolis coughed off the ball and played horribly. They couldn't catch. They couldn't hold on to the ball. They couldn't run. They couldn't defend. They couldn't do anything. They were awful.
It was a lot closer in the first half than it was in the second half.
Yeah, it was a lot closer in the first half than it was in the second half, although it was a rout in the first half. And the rout in the first half had mostly to do with Indianapolis's ineptness, and they would have been playing with their balls, not the Patriots' balls, and they could not play with their balls. So, there you go. It had nothing to do with the game, but it is a strike against, some would say, against Belichick, who many like to call Belichick. Now, I happen to like Belichick because I think he's just an interesting curmudgeon. And I've gone from being a person who despised Tom Brady for the what supermodel am I going to impregnate and dump tomorrow sort of a guy. And a guy who's getting lots of credit for being a superstar, mainly because he played on a team with a superlative defense and an extraordinary coach.
Sounds familiar.
it sounds familiar. It sounds a little bit like Russell Wilson, who in the Seattle Seahawks I like, who is playing for an exceptional coach on a team with an extraordinary defense. Although the difference is that because Russell Wilson plays a athletic style of quarterback as opposed to the dropback style of quarterback, he does not get the recognition that Tom Brady gets. Although he hasn't played
yet.
As long either.
Yet. Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, he's only been in the league for 3 years.
He plays as long either. But anyway, it's interesting that Belichick did something he hates to do. He addressed the media. He had an 8 to 9 minute soliloquy this morning where he provided his entire knowledge and history and philosophy on the proper inflation of balls. And I thought he was really quite good, quite candid. I think it is a lesson to us in a number of areas. One is I read a number of articles yesterday that said that Belichick should be kept out of the Hall of Fame. Belichick should be suspended from the Super Bowl, suspended for a year. And based upon what he had to say, this was an ESPN article. Based on what he had to say, I don't think there was any chance whatsoever that Belichick knew or had anything to do with underinflated balls. I think he is absolutely ignorant of the issue, and I don't think there's any reason to even apply the, well, he's the general manager and coach of the football team. He ought to know. I don't think there's a chance he knew or even should have known. Not, you know, how the game balls are prepared between the kickers and the quarterback, punter, kicker, quarterback, and whoever the staff person is that prepares them for inspection by the NFL. And then the NFL can say, you know, they were inspected and they meet or they do not meet specifications. So I think that those that wrote those kind of articles should be ashamed. Those who made those kind of statements ought to be ashamed. Those who buried Belichick because this is supposed to be a second offense at cheating, you really ought to be ashamed. You don't jump to that kind of judgment. You know, it certainly looked bad. But you need to know more than we know. And you know, the early accounts on the management of footballs was poorly reported. So now what do we do with Tom Brady, who will address the media later today? And what do we do about a media that is so wants to make extraordinary issues out of things that maybe aren't real issues? Anyway, I just thought I'd share with you the insights on that. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that how valuable it is and how much more, even how better it would have been had Belichick even come out a day earlier and addressed the media. It's when there is a feeding frenzy and a vacuum of information, most people today are likely to assume the worst. And sometimes if you just come out and say, this is what I knew, this is when I knew it, this is all I know, this is my philosophy on the subject, you can quiet the speculation. And I think that was what occurred today. Do you have any thoughts on Deflategate, Scott?
It is the most pointless thing. It is very, very pointless. It is not.
It is pointless unless. I mean, it didn't have any impact in that football game. I mean, did it determine the winner, I should say, on the game? No.
If it was something that the NFL should care about, then the NFL should be providing the balls.
Yeah.
They should be the ones that provide the balls. They should be the ones that.
They should just be a standard. It should be 12 and a half pounds. It should be, or 13 pounds, and it should be
right at 13 pounds.
Scuffed up out of the box the way that they want them. And all the balls should be provided by the NFL. They should not have a ball boy on either side, just an NFL person managing, overseeing the balls. So I would agree with you.
Yeah, so if it's something that means that much, then do that. But
no preference. You know, it's not like you go into a basketball game and the referees ask LeBron, we can pump this ball up to X pounds or Y pounds. What would you prefer, LeBron?
Well, that's just it. Is that the NFL or the NBA? They provide the ball. Every ball that goes onto an NBA court is provided by the NBA.
Right.
The NFL, I mean,
provides the raw stock in boxes, and the players have a chance to bump them up a bunch and to determine their pressure.
If it's such a big deal and you allow the teams to bring it, wouldn't that be like Clayton Kershaw showing up at the baseball field with like 20 balls in a bag and says, well, these are the ones I'm going to use today?
Yeah, one of the things that then they do in baseball, by the way, the umpires see to it that the balls are rubbed up a bunch before they're even brought into the game because they come out of the package. They're too slick. And so there is, as I understand it, the umpires themselves will rub up the balls so that speeds up the game so the pitchers don't have to rough them up in their hands to get a better grip when a new ball is put into play. But, I agree. It's the same thing. I think the only issue here is if Tom Brady gave instruction to someone or he himself checking the balls before the game was engaged in deflating the balls because he prefers a smaller, less inflated ball.
He played better in the second half than he did at first.
Yes.
And that tells me right there
But if he did, if, and it's a big, you know, we don't know.
No, you don't like Tom Brady because you've said it already.
I have become a fan of his, but I'm just going to tell you, if there is evidence that he instructed someone or participated in the deflating of those balls, then he's
gonna, except for right here is the problem with that. You've already had Aaron Rodgers, who is the best quarterback in the NFL, come out and say
that's not a problem at all because the balls were inspected.
It doesn't matter.
He can instruct his person.
So you're gonna get mad at Tom Brady for doing what other people have already, other quarterbacks have come out already and said, yeah, I tell people to either deflate them a little bit or overinflate them.
It's and that is fine prior to the inspection.
Well, how do you know that? How do you know that
he didn't have them? According to the NFL, they were inspected. They were in compliance, and after they were inspected, they were deflated.
Then I want to know the inspection process. Did they weigh him? Did they weigh him beforehand?
Weigh him.
Well, I'm saying. Well, they got you checked the PSI. It's a weight. I mean, it's between 12 to 13. 12.5 to 13.5 pounds. It's a pressure, but that's still
not a weight.
I know, but it,
pressure is measured in inch pounds, but it's not a weight. It's a pressure.
Well, I understand. So did they do that measurement?
The NFL says that they checked the pressure on the balls. They were
and then if
in
they
compliance.
Checked them off, and then
Indianapolis noted that they appeared deflated. They checked them again. At halftime and noted that they were deflated by 2 pounds, 11 of the 12.
So something happened
to the balls.
I think I'm willing to bet that this is exactly how it went. They didn't check the pressure on them. They grabbed them, they felt them, they were like, okay, these feel decent. And then when they went out, and that was it, they put their mark on it.
If that is the case, then the NFL has an official who has provided false testimony. And
well, the NFL,
his job and is covering up.
The NFL is never going to blame the referees anyway.
No,
they never will. They never have.
No.
They never will.
No, that's not true.
When have they?
A bunch of times when they've said the NFL.
No, they said they got the call wrong. Nothing ever changes.
Yeah. No, if it's found that the referee never actually checked the balls, they'll make that announcement to say that was their procedure or somebody sloughed off. The person's been lost their job and arrivederci. There is some credibility at stake here. It does not appear that it's Belichick's credibility that's at stake. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, an artillery show, or a mortar, one doesn't know for a certain. Struck a public transport stop in the city of Donetsk in the eastern Ukraine. We haven't talked about the Ukraine in a while, and it's mainly because nothing has changed in the Ukraine since my last reporting on it. What I had shared with you is that the Russians brokered a treaty, and the treaty led to the Kiev regime granting political autonomy to Donetsk and Luhansk. And what sounded like a marvelous solution, 2 years political autonomy, that we'll have a referendum after it all cools down, but that the ethnic Russian areas could be independent, this was a marvelous solution. A marvelous solution because, you know, keep in mind, the popularly elected government was ousted in a violent coup. And so the ethnic Russians had a leader that they had voted for and liked, and in a violent, undemocratic coup, he was taken out of power. And they did not participate in the elections that brought in the chocolate baron. And they were certainly not part of the American sponsorship of the rebellion in the first place, or the intelligence and military hardware and money that is being brought to bear to slaughter them by the thousands. And so it was the logical solution. But unfortunately, that's not what the United States wanted. The United States wants a hot zone in a revitalized Cold War because it's the last war that America thinks it's won. Now, it lost that war. And we've talked about why America lost that war in the past. It was one of the dumbest things that Ronald Reagan and America ever did, was engage in the military buildup that is alleged to have cratered the Russian economy, causing the breakup of the USSR, because it liberated the USSR and destroyed America financially, bankrupt America. And so when you realize what had happened here, that was a brilliant strategy. But unfortunately, the thugs in Kiev, who are just incredibly dishonest, chose to not only leave their military apparatus at the Donetsk airport, but to strengthen it and then to deploy it. And so here you have an agreement by that reprehensible government in Kiev saying we're going to grant autonomy, and yet parking the military at the city center and lobbing all manner of artillery at the population. And that's been going on and on and on and on. All the while, the United States blames Russia for the very battles and wars and deaths that it is inspiring. It is financing. It is equipping. And today, we just had another killing. 8 people murdered as a direct result of the belligerence, the weaponry, the funding, the intelligence briefings of the United States. Now, since no one seems to know if it was an artillery share, a mortar strike, or a missile strike, a trolley bus was blown up, and there'd be no reason, folks, and I know the media wants to say this is the blame game and everybody's blaming the other side, there'd be a 0% chance that the rebels, whose capital is Donetsk, would be shelling their own transportation system. And their city has already been shelled into oblivion by the Kiev regime, courtesy of the United States. And so this is clearly a provocation, again, from the Ukrainian military that is continuing to fight from the city's main airport. Rebel leader Alexander Zakharchenko called on local residents to gather at the scene of the trolley bus attack, promising them the opportunity to confront captured Ukrainian servicemen. Separately, video footage showed a handcuffed Kiev prisoner being shouted out and punched by civilians near the trolley bus. And so ought it to be. They committed murder. They agreed to autonomy. They reneged on their agreement, and they're continuing to use the Ukrainian military to pummel these ethnic Russians. There have been about 3,500, almost 4,000 people killed in Ukraine. And you might say, apart from the sadness of 3,000 to 4,000 people dead, apart from the devastation of that country, why do you care? And I care because of the deception, the politics that are being played here. And this is the politics of militarism and of death, the politics of economic control and manipulation. It is the kind of the epitome, really, of everything that's wrong with country. Why Yahweh asked us to walk away from country. And in Ukraine, you have the United States is substantially responsible for promoting the riots that took place in Kiev and overthrowing the popularly elected government, and then blaming Russia for the process, and then going in after Russia had offered to provide the money that the failed experiment known as the Ukraine has undergone. 20 years as an independent state, 300 years prior to that as part of Russia. It is a complete failed state, and it's a disgusting people. I mean, collectively, it's a disgusting people. Some of the worst in fact, the worst, not some of the worst, the two worst acts in the Holocaust both took place in the Ukraine, perpetrated by Ukrainians. This is not a good group of people. This is the group of people where their federal spending, particularly on the military, results in 80% skimming, 80% bribery and malfeasance. 80% of the money. And now the United States is providing that money, so we ought to care. And this is a country that has borrowed tens of billions of dollars and has never honored a single deal it has ever made relative to borrowing money. And so the United States ought not have engaged here. This was part of Russia for 300 years. It's something the United States ought not have engaged in. We ought not have tried to move them towards NATO so that the Russians would be in a different defense posture relative to surrounding this, particularly since Russia supplies the dominant amount of natural gas to Europe for the European economy and comfort, and those pipelines run through the Ukraine. So there's a lot at stake here. We ought not have gotten involved. We did get involved, and we blame the Russians for creating the mess that we, in fact, created. It reminds me of what happened with Jimmy Carter during the late 70s. He, with Zbigniew Brzezinski, deliberately, knowingly, purposefully, deployed the Pakistani Taliban to wage a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. And once that war started and there was massive carnage on both sides, as people were refugees and murdered and raped and robbed and just all of the things that go on with a major war, the United States blamed Russia for the war. And then it got so bad that Jimmy Carter wouldn't even allow the U.S. Olympic team to go to Moscow for the Olympics, blaming the Russians for the war that Jimmy Carter knowingly, deliberately, purposefully started and equipped. We provided the weapons for that war. And this mess in Ukraine is exactly the same thing. And the duplicity of the United States in this regard, the militancy of the United States in this regard, militarizing this campaign, the manipulation of money, taking it from Americans to fund these belligerents, and the carnage that results in it, while we stand on our soapbox and pretend like we're the high and mighty righteous country and that Russia is scum. It's an extraordinarily important view into the heart and soul that is the American government. It's why we ought not be political. It's why we ought not be patriotic. It's why we ought not praise our military. It's why we ought not be comfortable, the least bit comfortable, with the NSA and CIA, because they're being used in this battle. It's just like what happened in Afghanistan with Jimmy Carter, coming full circle now, happening all over again. And Ukraine. And sometimes these smaller problems, these smaller skirmishes, provide a clearer picture, a better window into the malfeasance of our country than do the bigger pictures. Because, well, I can itemize exactly how we created the mess in Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan. Now in the second go-around in Afghanistan and the second go-around in Iraq, and go through that history to show how disgustingly immoral and duplicitous and counterproductive and murderous the United States has been relative to Syria, relative to Iraq, relative to Afghanistan. Sometimes just the smaller vistas provide us with a clearer, cleaner view of what really lays at the heart of this nation. This is not a pretty picture, and it's something we ought to know about. There was another video released, I think it was yesterday. is going to be used to show racial profiling and racism. It is nothing of the sort. The two cops that committed murder were, one was white, one was black. The victim was black. The video, which released, shows a black man being shot dead by U.S. police officers as he stepped out of his car with his hands empty and raised. Jerame Reed was a passenger in a car pulled over by police, so he did nothing. He was sitting there as a passenger in a car in Bridgetown, New Jersey. The driver of the car, and the driver was not the one that was shot and killed with his hands raised, evidently rolled a stop. A stop sign. You know how you do the, we've probably all done it. You just don't come to a complete stop. He rolled through a stop sign. Now, before opening fire, one officer warned his partner that he thought he may have seen a gun in the glove compartment of the car. Now, the case follows Munson, which is, you know, the Constitution gives us the right to keep and bear arms. The case follows months of protests over killings of unarmed black men by white police officers in New York and Ferguson, Missouri. Well, you know, if I were to name the one, it would be Cleveland, Ohio, with the young boy that was murdered in cold blood. However, one of the two officers involved in the Bridgetown altercation is black. Now, the newly released footage from the police dashboard camera shows that police approached the car and then the officer warning his colleague about seeing a gun in the glove compartment. The officer shouts at Jerame Reed to show his hands and warns him that if you reach for something, you're going to be blankety-blank dead. Now, that is wholly, completely, and totally inappropriate. You know, I'm going to tell you, you've got a passenger in a car. He has not done anything wrong. That cop does not have any right to order that passenger and the car to do anything. As a matter of fact, a police officer showing up at a car where the driver rolled a stop sign with his gun deployed is grotesque. A police officer telling a passenger in a car who has committed no crime whatsoever that if you reach for something, you're going to be blankety-blank dead, tells me this is premeditated murder. It's revolting. It's disgusting. It is absolutely reprehensible. And I want to tell you, if it wasn't for the video, these cops would have claimed that the man had reached for the gun and was trying to shoot them. And they shot the man in retaliation. That is not the case, but that's what they would have said had it not been for the dashboard video. After the officer reaches into the car to retrieve what appears on the video to be a handgun, and by the way, they don't know. There's absolutely... Now, I'm going to tell you, you know, the guy's got a gun pulled on me. And I have means of protection. I'm thinking about it. But anyway, he didn't. So, he reached, you can see his hands in the video, goes forward. But there's no indication whatsoever that he grabbed a gun. He opens the car door, and he steps out of the car door with his empty hands raised to his shoulders. Empty hands, man. I'm surrendering. You asked to see my hands. Here's my hands. They are empty. And at that moment, both officers fired multiple shots and killed him. His hands were empty. Wasn't pointing a gun. Didn't have a gun. Not only wasn't pointing the gun at them and wasn't firing the gun at them, didn't even have a gun. His hands were up at shoulder, surrendering. He had done nothing wrong. They shot him dead. We have a horrible problem in America. with the attitude, training, and equipment provided, and the license to kill given to police officers. We have a horrible problem with the integrity of police officers, with their willingness to lie. And it is pervasive. The moral decay within the policing forces of America to do what is almost universally dishonest and all too often deadly has become a serious cancer that is destroying America. The militarization of our police, both by hiring police officers that are veterans of the military who have been trained to kill, by providing them with deadly force and making deadly force an initial option, by making it illegal to be armed consistent with the Constitution, and to treating those who are abiding by the Constitution as if they are criminals, by exonerating cops when they commit murder, as this one did, as the one did in New York by strangling a man to death. Well, he told them, "I can't breathe," a man who had done nothing wrong. In fact, he had done everything right. We have a serious problem. I've been asked several times by IQ Arvasuli if I was following the Pegida movement in Europe. And, you know, the answer was I was aware of it. I'm not really following it. And I'm not following it because I did not accept IQ's enthusiasm for it. And, well, I love IQ, and I admire IQ's intelligence and courage. There are things we disagree on. And one of them happened to be the Pegida movement in Europe, which is the anti-Islamization of Europe, where hundreds of thousands of people were protesting against Islam. And there was this thought that as the survey said that 1 in 8 Europeans wanted to stop all Muslim immigration into to Europe and agreed with the position of Pegida, that it was therefore meritorious because of the significant minority that was in accord with it. So, the one time I've talked about it, what I've said is that if they were protesting against Islam because they were aware that Islam was a criminal enterprise, that Islam was conceived by Muhammad for the purpose of robbing and raping and plundering innocent civilians, and that the Quran was the most immoral book ever written, the worst book ever written, and that Islam as a religion was wholly and completely false, and that Sharia law was based on the life and words and example of one of the most perverted men who ever lived, and that Islam is responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist acts, and that everything that Islam has infected, it has destroyed, and that those who claim to be integrated, loving, peaceful Muslims are universally hypocrites by the Quran's own definition. Read the ninth surah. If that was the basis of their antagonism towards Islam, then I would say that that was an extraordinary event that we were witnessing of people waking up to the truth and protesting, actually standing up against the evil that is Islam. And I would have applauded it. But it was my conclusion, based upon what I read, that that was not the case. It was my conclusion that this was all part of the anti-Semitism, anti-Semites. Shem in Hebrew is a name, and it's Christianity has been anti-Semitic for a very long time. You know, I was talking to a very good friend yesterday, who is ethnically Jewish, he's a member of the covenant now, about what's taking place with the exodus that is occurring now in Europe, where Jews are being forced to leave. And he says, you know, it's the part of that is the problem of the Islamization of Europe. And I said, no, that's not the problem. Now, is it a part, a contributor? Sure. And it's going to be blamed. But the fact is that Muslims represent about 5 to 6% of the European population at most. And maybe not even that much. The problem is that you've got countries like Greece, where 80 to 85% of the population is anti-Semitic. You've got nations like Great Britain, where the majority is anti-Semitic. France, same thing. Germany, same thing. And that anti-Semitism is running rampant in Europe because of its Christian heritage. Not because of, certainly not primarily because of Islam. And so I was under the impression that this was just they're not like us, and they're taking our jobs. So it was a little bit like the ultra-conservatives in America that fixate on immigration. I'm not one of them. I think there's lots of solutions for immigration in America that would be easy to apply, that resolve the problem without dealing with racism, and they're not like us, and I don't want them changing my country because it's my country. I'm not sympathetic to that. And I think much of the anti-Islamization comes out of this neo-Nazi, we want our country our way, you know, racist viewpoint. And extreme conservative, I'm not going to share what we have. Well, we found that to be true in a news release that became known yesterday.